Each and every decision you've made in your life has had an impact, shaped you into the person you are today. But what if I told you that there exists a universe for each of those choices, where things turned out differently? This may be a mere theory in our world, but within the realms of comic books, science fiction, or fantasy, it is a reality that holds infinite wonders and horrors. Either way, they make for some good storytelling. So come with us as we talk about the events occurring now and in the future. Let us discuss the state of the multiverse. Hello and welcome back to the State of the Multiverse podcast with me, your host, Reese. It's been a minute since the last one. I know I'd probably say that each episode now, but, you know, life gets in the way of working on stuff and it can be a bit of a pain. But we are back now and the news that I have for you guys today especially is from the last few weeks. I'm still keeping up to date with everything that's being talked about as best I can, but I got a lot to go through from the last few weeks anyway, so we shall get to that, and I will talk about the more current news in the next episode, and I should hopefully get to working on that a bit quicker than the last one, but I digress. Let's get into today's episode. I'd like to welcome you all back. This episode's artist shout out is The Animated Life. You can find her on Instagram. I'm not sure if she has any other pages, but her name's Amanda McFarlane. I've been following her artwork for a few years on some of my other pages. Very, very cool style. It's almost Disney-esque at times, but it's very much her own style, and she has this amazing kind of campaign going on right now where it's a draw in your own style, but it's all about breast cancer and raising awareness about that. So I would encourage you guys to take part in that if you have any art skills. I keep meaning to, but I haven't had the time to sit down and do my part of it yet, but I suppose through talking about it I'm also raising the awareness about it too. But she has drawn a lot of really cool stuff, either stuff affiliate, you know, associated with. She had a few cool Spider-Man ones I saw before. Does some really good supernatural stuff. Friends, like anything you can think of, and then there's the original art too, which is fantastic. Definitely go check her out. The Animated Life is the name of the page. So starting off with the Marvel news. The New Warriors series is officially dead after failing to find a network. I wasn't particularly looking forward to this series. I'd heard good things, and I was familiar with some of the actors involved. But again, this doesn't really impact me that much. But if you were a fan of the New Warriors series, are you upset that it's not going to happen? Were you looking forward to it? What character were you most looking forward to seeing? I'm only familiar with some of the actors. I didn't really know the characters that much. I heard Squirrel Girl was involved with it somehow, but again, I probably have to do some research into that team. It wouldn't be one of the most famous Marvel teams. Scarlet Witch will apparently have the most screen time in Phase 4. Possibly Phase 5. I hadn't heard confirmation on that, but I think Phase 4 I've been hearing a lot about, that she will have a lot of screen time between WandaVision and the Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness film. People want April 26th, 2023, to be Tony Stark Day. I mean, as a fan of the MCU, I think that would be pretty cool. Like I said in the last episode, or possibly the one before, I don't know whether this is getting out of hand or not, but at the same time, as a comic fan, go for it. I mean, if you're wondering what we're talking about and you somehow haven't seen Avengers Endgame, I'm aware of some of you out there. This is spoilers, but Tony Stark died. Yeah, he got the Infinity Stones and snapped Thanos and his army away. And considering April 26th was the date it came out and 2023 is the year it is set, I mean, logic adds up, I guess. Would you want a Tony Stark Day? I'd be interested to see if that would actually happen. I'm sure we will celebrate it in some way when it comes to that day, but yeah. In Spider-Man Far From Home, the only character to not get credited in the high school video for the heroes that saved the universe and bringing people back was Hulk, the guy that snapped his fingers to bring back everyone that was lost in the, as terrible a name as it is, the blip. So that's kind of unfair. I feel like, you know, I think I talked about this in the last episode. Hulk has gotten a pretty raw deal. You know, it's not been the best for him, but I do like Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk. I'm not taking anything away from that. It's definitely one of the more entertaining performances in the MCU. Lady Sif from Thor and Thor the Dark World will return in Thor Love and Thunder. That's good to hear. We finally get to figure out what happened with her. All we've been told so far is that she's on a secret mission, which, considering Ragnarok takes place 2017. See, the timeline is like kind of funny for that movie, because Sakaar has a weird time situation anyway. But yeah, she's been on that mission for a while. Must be pretty good. If you look at the comparisons between the barf scene in Civil War and in Far From Home, there is an added laughing track that makes Mysterio's view of the moment more humiliating than it was. These are not exactly news, but it's just kind of fun facts I came across. And now, apparently, Sony is developing a Madam Web movie. Oh, dear God. I mean, it could be good. Anything could be good with the right people working on it. I never thought there'd be a demand for a Madam Web movie. I don't know if there actually is, but hey, see if it actually happens, I guess. The third Tom Holland MCU Spider-Man movie will fall between Doctor Strange and Marvel What If on July 16th, 2021. And 2021 will be the first year that four Marvel movies will be released. Avengers 5 has been confirmed to eventually happen. I mean, we all knew it was going to. The Far From Home post-credit scene originally had Ned capturing people's reactions to Spider-Man's identity being revealed. I don't think I would have liked that very much. I think what they did was good. There's a rumor right now that Daniel Radcliffe is being eyed for Moon Knight, and also that Marvel/Disney are looking for a, quote, Jewish Zac Efron type. I don't want Zac Efron as Moon Knight. I think Daniel Radcliffe would be a pretty interesting choice. I recently came across some edits on Instagram that had, I don't know the actor's name off by heart, but if any of you have seen the Haunting of Hill House series on Netflix, the actor that portrays the adult version of Luke, that he looks quite similar to artist portrayals or artist illustrations of Mark Spector Moon Knight in the comics. And I definitely see it. I think he's a good actor from what I've seen. And I think he could probably play Moon Knight pretty well. And obviously there is that, you know, visual similarity. Marvel apparently wants John Bernthal's Punisher in the MCU. And I completely agree. Get the Punisher. Get Daredevil. Even bring Jessica back. I can live without Luke or Danny. But those three I kind of need back. And by kind of, I mean definitely get them back. I rewatched Punisher Season 2 recently, and yeah, we definitely need John Bernthal to be in the MCU proper. Secretary Ross has been spotted on the set of Black Widow. Could this lead to the Thunderbolts being introduced into the MCU? That'd be pretty interesting. I've seen some people make edits and stuff like that, or, you know, kind of wishful thinking of a Thunderbolts team in the MCU comprised of Bucky Barnes, Deadpool, Elektra, the Punisher, Red Hulk, and Ghost Rider. That'd be a pretty cool team, in my opinion. Marvel Studios may take charge of production of Marvel television series. That could be pretty interesting. Make sure everything's more connected. Tom Holland was apparently instrumental in Spider-Man's return to the MCU. When talks were, quote, 100% dead, he managed to bring both Marvel and Sony back to the table. Or Disney and Sony, as I should say. Jacob Batalon, I think that's how you pronounce his name, I'm sorry if it's not, wants to play a villain. And he is Ned Leeds in the MCU, Peter Parker's best friend. And I think a lot of people want him to just be the Ned Leeds of the comics, where he became the Hobgoblin. I think it'd be very interesting, considering this version of Ned Leeds is basically Ganky from the Miles Morales Ultimate Comics. But again, I like Ned. I like Jacob's portrayal of that character. There is a rumor that Will Smith will be Mr. Fantastic in the Fantastic Four. No, just no. And before anybody jumps to conclusions, it's not because he's black, it's because he's Will Smith. And I love Will Smith, you know, for movies he did years ago. I don't like current Will Smith. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, it's like certain actors you can only see as the actor. And Will Smith is definitely one of them. I mean, I haven't watched a movie with Will Smith in it and not seen him rather than the character in quite a long time. And I think the last one that I was genuinely convinced, you know, was an act, was acting and not just him being himself on screen, was probably I Am Legend. But I'm not saying he hasn't done anything good since. I mean, there's been some good stuff, but I haven't really been impressed. But then again, I just want a good Fantastic Four in the MCU. I want a good Doctor Doom and Galactus and Silver Surfer, all those characters. By the way, if any of you guys are fans of Funko and Funko Pops, I am a big fan. Anyone who knows me personally knows I have way too many of them, but they just keep bringing out better ones. They recently announced a bunch of Fantastic Four classic pop figures, which are really cool. Just thought I'd add that in there. Spider-Man's new suit is a mixture of Stark Tech and web fluid. I was very surprised to read that. It's cool though. I mean, makes sense. A picture of Iron Man's gear system from the Avengers Project game is out. They released a trailer showing off Kamala Khan is going to be in the game as a playable character. People had their theories about this for a while. I personally thought the trailer was really cool. I can't think of the actress's name, but she's definitely playing the character in the right way. It looks like it's going to be a good adaptation for that character and a very fun character to play as in the game when it comes out in May, I believe. Thor, Lord of Asgard suit is in the game. That's from a story from the comics. It looks more like an actual Viking outfit. There is a rumor that Black Widow may become a trilogy and that it may feature Daredevil. I wouldn't put too much faith in that. I mean, it'd be great because Daredevil and Black Widow had a relationship in the comics that was always pretty interesting. But I've heard some rumors, yeah, that it might be a trilogy. That could be pretty interesting. I mean, I definitely think Black Widow is going to be good, considering the people that are behind the camera and in front of it, obviously. But yeah, can't wait to see what gets confirmed with this stuff, obviously. Some babies are being looked for WandaVision, so it seems like they're really kind of going towards that they're going to include Wiccan and Speed, Wanda's children. Yeah, the Doctor Doom film that was going to be made for Fox, that was written by Legion creator Noah Hawley, is, quote, a Cold War parallel film and has gotten the interest of Kevin Feige. I'm sure most of you know that by now Kevin Feige is the guy in charge of the MCU, basically. He's also hinted that a new deal may allow Sony to bring Holland into the Venomverse. How this will happen is unclear, though. And a rumor right now is that Spider-Man 3 will likely feature Daredevil. I, for one, am very excited about that and hope it is in fact true. And kicking off the DC side of the news, we have a lot to talk about Matt Reeves' Batman. Jeffrey Wright is in talks to play Jim Gordon, although I think it may have actually been confirmed now. Jonah Hill is being eyed for a villain role in the Batman. People are wondering whether this could be as the Penguin or possibly the Riddler. but we shall have to wait and see. Matt Reeves is developing a trilogy that could expand beyond three films and, oh God, create a cinematic universe. I'm not trying to be pessimistic about it, but I'd like for, especially DC, focus on making a good movie, then work from there. You know, don't like, obviously have a plan if you want to do more, but maybe don't announce everything right away. I mean, that's kind of my problem with what they're doing now, especially with stuff like Disney Plus. They're just throwing everything and, like, you know, the kitchen sink too, basically. You know, like, oh, we're going to include this and this and this, and we're planning this, we're going to make it a cinematic universe. Not everything has to be a cinematic universe. I mean, I will review Joker later in this episode, and that is not connected to any other DC film, and it works. Well, I'll tell you how it works later on. You just have to stick around for the review. There's a rumor that Nightwing and Batgirl may appear in this Batman trilogy, and it was seemingly confirmed, but we haven't had official confirmation, but everyone's reporting on it, that Zoe Kravitz is Catwoman for this new Batman trilogy. I think that's pretty good casting. I mean, there was some other actresses rumored, but like they were predominantly African American, which, you know, as long as they play the character well, who cares? But yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny that Zoe Kravitz was in X-Men First Class, and her stepdad is Jason Momoa. So yeah, he was very happy for her. He put up a thing on Instagram about it. The teaser trailer for the Deathstroke animated CW Seed series came out. I watched it. It was pretty cool. The voice acting was okay. I kind of wish they got Manu Bennett from Arrow, or, you know, I mean, even the guy that's playing him on Titans. I really should check how to pronounce his name. I'm sorry, I'm not even gonna try because I'll butcher it. But he is doing a fantastic job on Titans. The actor playing Deathstroke. Harley Quinn, the animated series, will debut November 29th. That is starring Kaley Cuoco. Yeah, I mean, I'll watch it. I'm not, you know, it looks like it's trying to be Deadpool, but whatever. Stargirl, the next DC Universe series, will begin in 2020, or will come out in 2020, I should say. DC Universe confirm a live-action Bizarro World anthology series is coming out, and it will feature Ambush Bug and Space Cabbie. I mean, hey, as I said, anything can work. Set pictures from this season of The Flash reveal a possible look at the Negative Flash, which was a recent thing from the comics. I did read that part. I've kind of given up on the Flash series. I mean, does it even count as DC Rebirth anymore? They've kind of dropped that. But I read up to Flash War, which was Volume 8, and I don't really feel like I need any more. They are doing some pretty interesting stuff now, but I don't really want to have to read to get to there. But yeah, I mean, Negative Flash should be pretty cool. There's like slight changes to the costume from what I can make out. Lila Diggle, the actress that plays her, I can't think of her name, but she from Arrow, she will be playing Harbinger, and a picture was released for Crisis on Infinite Earths. Ashley Scott will reprise her role as Huntress, aka Helena Kyle, the child of Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle, from the Birds of Prey TV series for the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover. The Birds of Prey trailer came out. I was pretty happy with it. Obviously, it's really relying on Harley Quinn, but hopefully the next trailer and hopefully the movie shows off a lot more of the other female characters that we have. I, for one, am particularly excited for Black Canary, because while I haven't definitively decided, Black Canary is probably the top of my favorite DC female characters, and I really want to see a good interpretation of her, because not everybody's been happy with what they've done on Arrow and stuff like that. I mean, there's like been about 5 canaries at this stage, or some version of the canaries on Arrow. Osric Chow has been cast as Ryan Choi, aka the Atom, for the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover. Osric was in Supernatural, and I was a very big fan of him in that. He played, what was the character's name again? Kevin, was it Kevin? I think so. It was a K anyway. Apologies if you're somehow listening to this, Osric. Loved John Supernatural, loved all those guys. Can't wait to see it as the Atom. I think Ryan Choi, from what I know, is a pretty cool character, and as much as I'll miss Ray Palmer, it's good to see the Atom legacy keep going. I mean, he's the Atom in the comics right now, as far as I know, so yeah, that should be pretty cool. Superman, Man of Tomorrow, and Batman, Death in the Family animated film slash short are coming out. The film will be the Superman, Man of Tomorrow, and the short will be Batman, Death in the Family. That would be pretty cool. I'd like to see Death of the Family adapted, which is a much crazier story, I think, but then again, we shall see. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who played Thomas Wayne in Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, still wants to play Thomas Wayne Batman from the Flashpoint timeline if DC, quotes, get it together. I believe he said get their shit together, but, you know, that's just Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I still really want to see him as Batman. That'd be cool. I'd love to see a Flashpoint movie. I mean, it would have to be like a Justice League type movie, not just for Flash. But yeah, that'd be great. I mean, the Flashpoint Batman suit design is awesome, and that'll be crazy to see on TV, on a big screen. Tom King, who has been working on Batman for the run of DC Rebirth the last few years, and also wrote Mr. Miracle and a bunch of other very, very good books, including Sheriff of Babylon, which I've heard a great, a lot of good things about. He has posted about returning to The Button. The Button was his contribution to the Rebirth storyline, in which when Wally West, at the beginning of Rebirth, tried to return to this timeline, a part of the lightning that came off of him stuck the comedian's button from Watchmen into the wall of the Batcave, and Batman and Flash were investigating it, and it was a really good story. Actors that were almost cast as Batman in the past: Bill Murray in the original Tim Burton Batman movie, Cillian Murphy, who I actually talked to a friend about today, was almost Batman for Christopher Nolan. And Josh Brolin was approached for Batman in Batman v Superman. And on the other side of the scale, actors that were almost cast as Superman: Sylvester Stallone, that would have been interesting to say the least. Jude Law, no, I can't see that at all. And Joe Manganiello, or Manganello, apologies if that's, you know, not how you pronounce it. Whatever happened to Joe Manganiello's Deathstroke movie? I mean, I thought he was pretty cool. I loved his design at the end of Justice League, but I doubt that's happening. An Arrow spin-off with Juliana Harkavy, Katie Cassidy, and Catherine McNamara is in development. I believe it's going to be called Green Arrow and the Canaries, because they released a promo picture today, or recently, about it looks like a comic book cover. That's the only working name we have, but go with that, I guess. And due to the success of Joker, a Lex Luthor solo film is being developed in which Luthor is president. I'm just hoping they don't overdo it on these villain solo movies. Again, maybe get Bryan Cranston to be Lex Luthor and I'll get excited. I mean, it sounds like an interesting plot anyway, but again, when I hear president, obviously there is that, you know, there's going to be some commentary on Trump and stuff like that. Like, again, I don't find Trump jokes funny. I mean, occasionally maybe, but like, I think they're just a, you know, they're a cheap one to go for, I think. But yeah, Lex Luthor, great character. Get a really good actor in there like Bryan Cranston or someone like that, and you know, tell a good story just like Joker. You know, not by that I mean, you know, make it a well thought out movie by itself, and don't try make a Luthor cinematic universe, please. Yeah, The Walking Dead has a new show, and it is set 10 years after the outbreak, and is focused on the first generation of kids who grew up in this world. I'm 2 weeks behind on the new season of The Walking Dead, but I've heard good things, and last season definitely was the shot in the arm that the series needed. Yeah, so Hopefully that's good. I don't watch Fear the Walking Dead. I've honestly fallen asleep every time I try to watch it. But yeah, let's see how that goes. And Mike Mignola, the creator of Hellboy, among other creations as well, but mainly Hellboy is what he's famous for, got inducted into the to the Harvey Awards Hall of Fame. And I came across this news thanks to Aw Crap, the Hellboy podcast. They are a very good podcast. I started following them a few months ago, and they were very nice enough to follow back my on my accounts. And yeah, a little shout out to them. You guys are awesome. Keep up the good work, and I love listening to your stuff. Yeah, that'll just about do it for the news. Let's get on to the next section. And I have a quick scenario that I came across recently before we get into the next section. I'd like to maybe put it towards you guys, see what you think. In the Falcon and the Winter Soldier series, could Zemo pull another Civil War trick, like in the movie, and try break up Sam and Bucky by revealing that it was Bucky who killed Sam's partner Riley from the military? Just something to think about. That could be pretty interesting, I think. And I came across a lot of really interesting fan cast ideas recently, and I want to go through some of them for you guys. The Crime Syndicate, based this is based on the version seen in the New 52. For those of you that do not know, the Crime Syndicate is the Justice League of Earth-3. They are criminals, and in this world, everyone that is evil on the main Earth is good, and vice versa. So, Ultraman, Brett Dalton. I keep seeing this guy pop up for like Superman type fan casting, so I think that should be good. Not familiar with the actor, but Owlman, Dan Stevens. Dan Stevens needs to play some comic book characters. I mean, seriously. I mean, obviously he played David Haller Legion, but I'm not caught up on that yet. I need to finish season two and then three. But Dan Stevens was actually I'm not sure whether it's official, but there's some art out there apparently from Guillermo del Toro's attempted stab at a Justice League Dark movie, and he was going to be Constantine. I think Dan Stevens would be a phenomenal Constantine, and I mean, just if they're going to do Constantine again, get a British actor to play him. You know, Matt Ryan so far is the perfect Constantine for me, but yeah, I mean, for a movie, if they're going to go with a different actor, go for Dan Stevens, I'd say. Superwoman, Yvonne Strahovski. I am familiar with this actress. She, from what I know, she definitely has the acting capability to play a character like Superwoman. Superwoman is particularly in the Forever Evil storyline that eventually kind of goes into Darkseid War. She's pretty interesting, and you don't really know, or not even her own team can fully trust her, which is crazy, but yeah, that'd be a pretty good choice. Johnny Quick, Jack Rayner. Jack Rayner is a Irish actor, as far as I know. He was in a movie called Sing Street, that is a very, very good movie and is getting a stage adaptation, I believe. I actually saw Jack Rayner in an airport a few months ago. I wanted to go say hi, but I didn't realize it was actually him until he was already leaving. So, but whatever, that's what happens. Maybe I'll get to meet him someday. He's was also in the recent movie Midsommar. Again, I need to watch Hereditary and Midsommar because they're meant to be good movies. Yeah, that'd be pretty good. I think he's definitely a good actor, and he's got more attention now, so that's great. Power Ring. I should have said actually, Superwoman is a, I believe some people say it's Lois Lane with powers. Some people say it's Wonder Woman. I'm not entirely sure, but I have to double check. But yeah, obviously she's like the evil version of Wonder Woman on this team, or the counterpoint of Wonder Woman on this team. Johnny Quick is the Flash, and Power Ring is Green Lantern. Power Ring has his ring is like a parasite on his arm. And it's possessed by the spirit of a character named Vulthoom. And basically, it just chooses people that are really, really like fearful. So Power Ring is Hal Jordan, but it's not our Hal Jordan. You know, he's not like able to overcome all his fear and stuff. I think Jamie Dornan could do some pretty good work with that. I think he could play some pretty interesting comic characters if he was given the chance. But you know, kind of like the whole Robert Pattinson thing. You know, it's like, oh, he's the 50 Shades guy. You know, but I mean, hell, I like the casting, or the idea of the casting. And Sea King, aka Aquaman, Manu Bennett. I mean, hell, go for that. That's pretty awesome. Deathstorm, Lakeith Stanfield, I should say. I mispronounced that by accident. Lakeith. I almost have a lisp. Apologies if anyone has a lisp that's listening. Yeah, he's a really good actor. I know him from Get Out, a few other movies as well. But he's been doing a lot of interesting work lately. I need to get caught up on some of his stuff. But for those of you that know the movie Get Out, he's the guy that actually says "Get Out." He's done a lot of other good stuff, but I need to get more familiar with his work. We got a if Watchmen was going to be remade into another movie, these are some other casting choices for the comedian Jon Hamm. Yes, just definitely. I love Jeffrey Dean Morgan's version of the comedian, but Jon Hamm could do it pretty well as well. Night Owl, John Krasinski. That could be pretty good. I think he could definitely play the type of character that Daniel Dreiberg is. Dr. Manhattan, Michael Fassbender, automatic yes for me. Rorschach, Jerome Flynn, and for those of you that don't know, Jerome Flynn was Bronn, or Sir Bronn of the Blackwater from Game of Thrones. I think that could be pretty interesting. Jackie Earle Haley was a pretty phenomenal Rorschach, I'll give him that though. Silk Spectre, Olivia Wilde, definitely a yes from me. She could very play that character very well. Not to take anything away from Malin Ackerman, but I think Olivia Wilde could probably do something a bit more with the character to actually not make her annoying. Again, that's down to the writing and stuff like that. If Malin Ackerman is a very good actress, and Ozymandias, Mahershala Ali, that could be some really cool casting. He definitely has the chops to play that type of character. Matthew Good played him, I believe, in the Zack Snyder movie. He did a very good job, but again, he didn't really have much of a personality. Not that Ozymandias has much of one, but again, you kind of have to add something to the role. An individual one, or have individual ones kind of spread out through this, I think. Yeah, I think so. I have a few. But the first one is Jai Courtney, who played Captain Boomerang in Suicide Squad as Sabretooth. That could be pretty cool. He's definitely able to get the kind of the physique for it. Justice League Dark, which we just need a movie of. John Constantine, could be played by Nikolai Coster-Waldau. Jamie Lannister from Game of Thrones. That's for those of you that don't know. I think he could play a pretty good Constantine if he could get the voice down. But again, not everybody can do accents. Zatanna Anna Buckstein. I feel like the name is familiar, but I don't know her face. I would say it's probably good, but then again, I'm not familiar with the actress to comment on that. Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot, just keeping it with what we have, I guess. Madame Xanadu, Gerald Prescott, who plays that character in this or played in the Swamp Thing series, which I can highly recommend. Deadman, James McAvoy, that could be pretty cool. Swamp Thing, Derek Mears, who again plays Swamp Thing, so definitely keep that and keep the same suit design. Raven, Tegan Croft from Titans, yeah, she is already playing that character, so keep going with that. Professor Chimp, Alan Tudyk, he can just be in everything, he's fantastic. And Pandora, Daisy Ridley, that'd be pretty interesting, I think. For Marvel's Champions, Hercules could be played by Henry Cavill. That'd be pretty good. Angel by Dan Stevens. It's not bad. I think it just he'd probably need a better character, or maybe an actor like Dan Stevens could make Angel more popular. Ghost Rider, Carl Urban, that'd be cool. Black Widow could be played by Vanessa Kirby. She is a pretty good actress from what I know. She's been in stuff like The Crown and things like that. Iceman, Lewis Pullman. I feel like I know that name, but I can't think of the face. Amadeus Cho, Justin Min. Again, these are kind of familiar, but I can't think of the actors. Nova, Adam Irigoyen. Irigoyen, Irigoyen or Irigen, maybe. Yeah, I mean, I think I know that actor from some other stuff. Viv Vision, the daughter of Vision. Saoirse Ronan. Yeah, why not? I could see it. Kamala Khan, Zoe Rahman. Is that the one that's playing her in the video game? I'll have to check that. But yeah, so far these seem like pretty good choices. Miles Morales, Miles Truitt. Yeah, he actually kind of looks a bit like Miles Morales a little bit, or I could be mixing up the actors. I could be. I have an actor in mind for a fan cast idea I had, but I won't get into that. I might be mixing them up though. And then Dacre Montgomery as Cyclops. Not bad. An individual one here, Anthony Starr from Amazon Prime's The Boys, who played Homelander as Eobard Thawne. I think that could be really good. Let's see. For X-Men, for Professor X, we have Eoin Gruffudd. It's always that actor has to like explain how to pronounce his name every time he does an interview. I feel so bad for him. He played Professor X in, no, not Professor X, Mr. Fantastic, I should say, sorry, in the original Fantastic Four movies. For Magneto, Michael Shannon. I don't think he ever wants to do a comic book movie again, but he could definitely play a good Magneto. For Cyclops, Ansel Elgort. I mean, I kind of only like him in Baby Driver. Everything else he kind of annoys me in, but okay. Jean Grey and Anya Taylor-Joy. She could be pretty good. For Beast, Jesse Plemons. He's a good actor, but I think Joel Edgerton could be a better Beast. Angel, Brendan Thwaites, who plays Dick Grayson on Titans. Iceman, Jason Norman. That name is very familiar, I think. Rogue, Sydney Sweeney. I've heard that not that name a lot lately. I don't think I know her from anything, but if maybe that's a good actress, I'm not sure. Gambit, Jacob Elordi. Why do I know that name? Nightcrawler, Wyatt Olaf. Shadowcat, aka Kitty Pryde. Millie Bobby Brown. Maybe. Jubilee, Peyton Elizabeth Lee. That's it for the X-Men. Some individual ones. Lily Collins as Carol Ferris. Erin Moriarty from Jessica Jones and The Boys as Gwen Stacy. And Michael Rosenbaum as a live-action Wally West for The Flash. Because for those of you that don't know, Michael Rosenbaum, aside from playing Lex Luthor on Smallville, voiced Wally West Flash, and a few other versions of the Flash in various animation and video game and like movie type stuff. That's Michael Rosenbaum gets a doesn't get enough attention. I've been following his Inside of You podcast for a while, and I haven't quite listened to his new podcast yet, but from what I've heard, it's quite good. Definitely go check those out. He's got some really good guests on there for Inside of You, Michael Rosenbaum. The Dark Knight Returns fan cast. This one was pretty good. For Batman, Josh Brolin. For Alfred, Ian McKellen. Carrie Kelly, Sophia Lillis. For Jim Gordon, Kurt Russell. For Harvey Dent, Bruce Willis. For Joker, Willem Dafoe. For the mutant leader, Hapthor Julius Bjornsson, aka the Mountain from Game of Thrones. Stefan James as Son of Batman. Ellen Yindel, played by Mackenzie Davis. Yeah, she could play that character pretty well. Brad Pitt as Green Arrow. I could, considering the version of Green Arrow in The Dark Knight Returns, I can definitely see that. Matt Bomer as Superman. I mean, he just needs to play Superman or some Superman type character. And Helena Bonham Carter as Catwoman. I think that would be a phenomenal movie. If you had that cast, anyway. And if the story of Spider-Man PS4 would be adapted, Peter Parker, Brendan Thwaites, MJ, Steph Tyler, who plays the, or does the motion capture for MJ, and they use her face for that in the game. Diane Lane as Aunt May. Miles will be played by Chosen Jacobs. Doc Ock will be played by Mark Hamill. Bryan Cranston as Norman Osborn. Stephen O'Young as Martin Lee, who I believe played him in the game. Aaron Paul as Electro and Ed Harris as Vulture. Again, some of those actors, I knew the names, but I couldn't think of the faces. But yeah, if you have any fan casts there that you agree with and want to talk about, maybe reach us through the Instagram direct messaging. If you don't want to get involved with the show in any way and give some feedback, or you want to ask questions, feel free to do that. Yeah, so fan casts are fun, I think. Let's move on to the next section, which is something I wanted to talk about last week, but didn't quite have the time. So, the superhero genre, I've heard a lot of people talking about lately, saying how they feel very tired, that there is an oversaturation of the genre. To an extent, I agree. Even as a fan of comic books and of the films that inspire them, it can be a little overwhelming and hard to explain to someone who is not as invested as I am. It is undeniably the genre of the new century, being the most popular films right now, especially with the MCU. But I would like to bring up the parallel between the superhero genre and the genre of the Western. The Western films were popular for several decades, even still being made today, just not as notably. The Western film genre has been around since the 1920s to modern day. And I doubt that everyone was a fan of Westerns when they were out, or when they were popular. And I'm sure previous generations complained about their kids liking Westerns too much. And, you know, every generation will complain about the next. Obviously, everyone is entitled to their opinions and preferences, but I thought the similarities were undeniable between the Western genre's popularity and, obviously, the current popularity of superhero films. And speaking of Westerns and superhero films, if you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend Logan, which, if you take away the powers, it's a very fantastic character piece that feels like a Western. I mean, and obviously with the powers it's the same as well, but yeah. I was thinking about it recently. I think the superhero genre is the new Western. It is the it thing, obviously. And I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. And for those of you that may not be familiar with the series, AMC's Preacher is now over. I have been following this show since it began in 2016. I remember watching the first episode with my dad. I remember watching the full season with my dad. It's a show that has meant a lot to me the last few years, and I'm definitely gonna want to get into the book soon as I can. But I wanted to talk about the end of the show and kind of looking back on it in hindsight, and obviously not being familiar with the books too much, I can't really compare it, but at the same time I want to talk about it just as a person that enjoyed it. This is going to have spoilers for the ending of the show, so if you haven't watched it, I would recommend skipping this part. I don't have a timestamp, unfortunately, but this shouldn't take too long. And the next part will be, it will also have spoilers for something else, but it'll probably be something more people have seen. But yeah, let's talk about it. So Jesse and Tulip basically grow old, have a kid, and die. Sounds depressing, I know. No, but it was good, and it made a lot of sense for me. I was quite happy with the finale. Inscribed on Jesse's tombstone is one of the good guys, and that's what his dad wanted him to be. It was one of the last things he said to him before he was shot in the head. Eugene, aka Arsface, became a rock star. I'm so happy Eugene got something out of this show, out of all this. I mean, there was an episode, there was a part in the final season which really should have got Ian Colletti more appreciation, and I'll get to that in a minute. But it's more kind of development for Eugene, and while it's not explicitly said that he becomes a rock star, character in another scene does wear a t-shirt that has his face on it, and it's like a rock band t-shirt. Herr Star, one of the villains of the series, killed Featherstone, his up until the end of the final season, his devoted follower, and got away with it all. I suppose it wouldn't be Preacher, or it wouldn't be a Garth Ennis story if everything wrapped up completely in a neat bow. God tells Jesse his father is in heaven, and turns out God's plan was that he wanted to be loved by humanity. And yeah, Jesse didn't really give a shit. I mean, Jesse got emotional hearing about his dad and that he's in heaven and stuff. And that those are kind of like those are part of my favorite scenes. My favorite scenes from the episode were Jesse and God, Arsface in the hospital, where basically a doctor comes back in to see him and encourages him to commit suicide by overdosing on morphine. But Eugene finally, in that moment, like shouts at him and kind of lets out these last few years for us. Obviously, it's not as long for the characters on the show, but like all that pent up rage and emotion that like he's kind of kept inside of himself, and it spurs him on to go live his life and do greater things, which I think is fantastic. And then the last of my favorite scenes is God and the Saint of Killers, but we'll get to that in a moment. Jesse helps the Saint of Killers by taking his confession and killing him. And how is that helping him, you may ask? By taking confession before he died and truly repenting for every sin he's committed, the saint is granted access to heaven. And he gets there and waits for God, because Jesse knows that, once he tells God to basically fuck off, that, well, I believe the words he used are, whiny little bitch. But he tells him not to go back to heaven. And of course, he knows God eventually will, because God in the world of Preacher is not as powerful as he normally is unless he's connected to his heavenly throne. And when he gets to heaven, he finds all the angels dead and the saint waiting for him. And he basically tries to convince the saint to allow him to pass and get to his throne and offer the saint an eternity of love with his family in heaven. And the saint chooses hate. And we get a Western style, pistols at dawn type moment where God has his hand at his side and he's getting ready to throw lightning, and the saint has his hand on his gun. And when they both go to fire, it's the saint that gets a bullet right between God's eyes. It was probably my favorite moment of the whole episode, because the Saint of Killers was a character I really wanted to see what was going to happen with. I kind of knew from
pictures I saw from the books, but at the same time, it was a fantastic moment. And the Saint of Killers walks over to God's throne and sits down, taking his place as ruler of heaven. So, yeah, that's pretty dark or pretty awesome. Why not both? Cassidy roams the world for decades, and after finally meeting Jesse and Tulip's daughter at their graves, he decides it's time to die, because he's seen and done everything he could possibly want to do. And he walks out, leaving his umbrella on a gravestone, and steps into the sunlight, burning and hoping that when he drops, he will meet his friends again and possibly go on some more adventures that we don't get to see. But yeah, Jesus works in customer services after killing Hitler and moving past the need for God's approval. So yay for character development. Yeah. Overall, I was really happy with the finale. And I think it tied up the show as best it could. I know myself and my friends and people that I know that watched the show, we were, for the most part, just really happy with it. I do really want to read the books. The show has definitely meant a lot to me the last few years, and I think everyone involved deserves so much praise. I actually recently came across an account. I've gotten to know the person that runs it. Actually, it goes by Redneck Saints, and you should really check it out. They're doing an event this month called Saints Preach Tober, and there's like edits each day for each character. That is really, really cool. On my art account, I was involved in 2 days of the event. I sent older pictures from last year that I did of Cassidy and her star. My art page is Reese O'Connor Images, if you want to check that out. That would be pretty great. But yeah, the hair star picture actually got a like from Betty Buckley, who played Grandma, and Ian Colletti, who played Arseface. So that was pretty cool. So shout out to Redneck Saints, and go check out their page. In closing, for the preacher part of this, I would like to just thank Garth Ennis, Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, Sam Catlin, Dominic Cooper, Ruth Negga, Joseph Gilgan, Ian Colletti, Pip Torrens, Graham McTavish, Julianne Emery, Mark Herlick, Noah Taylor, Malcolm Barrett, Betty Buckley, Tyson Ritter, Colin Cunningham, Adam Crosdale, Tom Brooke, Jeremy Childs, and Jackie Earl Haley. Those are the actors that have contributed to, the actors, the producers, directors, you know, people involved, the writer, obviously, of the original texts of Garth Ennis, everyone of note that I could think of to include and say thank you to, because this show has just been awesome, and it went out riding into the sunset, metaphorically, let's say. Yeah, I love Preacher, and if you've watched it, I hope you were happy with the finale as much as I was. Thanks. And now we get to what, frankly, a lot of you seem to want, and I'm not complaining, by the way, my review of Joker by Todd Phillips and starring Joaquin Phoenix. I would give it 9.5 out of 10 easily, and I would possibly say 10, because it's just fucking perfect. It's fantastic. It's amazing. It's everything I wanted it to be and more. And I got to see it in IMAX, which was great. Joaquin is perfect, and Todd Phillips was definitely the best choice to direct. It's disturbing and strikes the balance so that the audience feels bad that he's becoming the Joker. And you're not rooting for him to be the villain. I'm going to go through my non-spoilery opinions first, and then I will say when I'm going to talk about spoilers so you guys can skip ahead. Yeah, the I'll try not to spoil as much as possible because you really should just go see it for yourself if you haven't already. But yeah, so here we go. There is very little connection to the mainstream Batman mythos, which definitely helps. Yeah, it's an isolated movie, and despite what Joaquin Phoenix has said, about being interested in doing a sequel, I don't think it should happen. It's bleak and depressing, but does not, and I repeat, does not glorify violence. The score by Hildur Guðnadóttir, that's not how you pronounce it. I'm very sorry. The score tells a story by itself, and definitely adds to the visual to the visuals so much more. It was composed before filming took place, and for the scenes such as the bathroom dance, which if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. The track was played, and Joaquin Phoenix created the dance instead of going with the original idea for the movie, in which, Arthur would act uncharacteristically and hiding evidence about something. I won't say too much about the plot, at least in this section. The Gotham in the film is the best interpretation thus far. It's realistic with social distinctions without making either status more right than the other. As much as I would love to see Phoenix as Joker again, I don't want a sequel. Not really. I mean, if they make one, I will go see it. I'm sure I'll enjoy it, unless they absolutely butcher it somehow. But again, he's on board, but I don't agree. Yeah, the portrayal is fantastic, though. I mean, it's not the traditional Joker, but I don't care. It's its own thing. It's yeah. I can't even really say any more. It's the type of film that will piss off a lot of people due to its disturbing nature, and also its brutally realistic depiction of our society. But it's a necessary film. The film is not responsible for people's actions, but should make us take a closer look at how we treat each other and those of us more vulnerable and mentally unstable that need help, like Arthur. I really don't like that the film is, it was being kind of propped up about being so violent and blah blah blah, but I'll get to that later. For the people wondering, from here on out, I am talking about spoilers. So if you want to skip ahead to the next section, which is where I will be starting a new series on this in this podcast. But yeah, so from here onwards is spoiler territory for Joker. And the spoilers begin in 3, 2, 1. The fact that Arthur Fleck is revealed to be an unreliable narrator is fucking genius, and calls back to the Killing Joke moment, where the Joker says, "If I'm gonna have a backstory, I want it to be multiple choice." And there is lots to take away from the movie. You can look at it as a straightforward narrative and go based on what the movie tells you, like I did. I really want to go see it again, but I haven't had the opportunity yet. But you can look at it as it was all in his head, parts of it were in his head. I mean, Todd Phillips has come out and said that Arthur may not be the Joker from the comics, but he may have inspired the Joker from the comics. Because Arthur has such an impact on society at that moment, in the film anyway. The reveal that Zazie Beetz's character was only in a relationship with Arthur in his mind blew me away. But in hindsight, the signs were all there. I mean, the way they got together was very unrealistic. But yeah, no, she was fantastic in the film as well. The potential of Arthur being related to Bruce Wayne is interesting, but I was very happy they didn't go through with it. There's an interesting theory that they are brothers due to the actor that plays Bruce Wayne in the film played a younger Joaquin Phoenix in another movie called You Were Never Really Here. But regardless, the film addresses this by confirming his mother is batshit crazy for allowing him to be abused by her boyfriends in the past. And he doesn't really remember this. I mean, if you've seen the movie, you know, but yeah. The condition Arthur suffers from causing him to laugh uncontrollably when uncomfortable or sad makes the scenes when he laughs all the more tragic. When he kills his mother and has no reaction, or when he kills the three guys on the subway. I mean, if you know that when he's uncomfortable or he's sad, he laughs uncontrollably, and then scenes where he should feel them and he doesn't, it adds to everything. The scene in which Joker goes on a talk show and kills someone is inspired by The Dark Knight Returns. In the book, it's the audience and the host with gas. He kills them all, but in the show, he shoots Robert De Niro right in the forehead, which was fantastic. That scene was amazing. The scene that blew my mind was when Joker was being taken away in the cop car and is hit by an ambulance and rescued by his followers that were driving the ambulance. He rises up onto the hood of the car, basking in the admiration of the people he has inspired to take up violence, basically, against the people that feel they are being oppressed by. The blood running from his nose gets his attention, and he smears it across his face, giving himself a smile. Watching this in the cinema, my jaw hit the floor. I was blown away. I mean, I was like, of course that's what they're going to do. Again, you know, when I say about him inspiring people to violence, I mean, in the context of the film, it makes sense. But again, I repeat, this film is not inciting violence. That is what the media is trying to prop up. But again, I'll get to that in a minute. The ending scene contains Arthur's only genuine laugh in the movie. When his Arkham psychiatrist asks him what the joke is, and he responds that she wouldn't get it. That Todd Phillips has confirmed that's the only genuine laugh he has in the entire movie. The talk's still going on about the violence in Joker, in my opinion, is frankly ridiculous. You cannot blame people who are allowed to express their creative process. You know, like Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix, they wanted to make this movie. They are not responsible for other people's reactions to their work. The film is far less violent than other superhero movies in the last few years. If you take something like Deadpool or Logan, you know, stuff like that. I mean, not saying that Logan was particularly, you know, overly violent. It was quite violent, to be fair. But, you know, stuff like Deadpool, there's horrible violence in that, but it's taken as comedic. Not criticizing Deadpool, I love those movies, but you know, there's people that won't go see the movie, or they're protesting it because it's too violent. It's not a kid's movie. Don't you dare bring your kids to see this movie. But at the same time, it's not constant violence every couple of seconds. There's like two scenes in my mind that spring to like that come to me, and I'm like, yeah, that is graphically violent. But overall, it's a slow burner of a film, and it saves the violence for when it is properly supposed to be there. The people who say, I mean, actually, before I move on, actually, there's films that are outside the superhero genre that are far more violent and don't get anywhere near the same amount of attention. The people in the media that have been fanning the flame of hysteria are most likely doing it to get attention. They like a lot of people. Other people have been saying this as well. It's almost like the media wanted something to happen. They wanted a tragedy to happen at a screening of Joker. I mean, if you look at what was actually been reported, there was like a midnight screening or a late screening of Joker, and people were like asked to leave because they were smoking and causing a disturbance. I mean, geez. Like that's nothing. It's like people were expecting like the world to blow up, it seems. Like, it's, I mean, Joker came out, people loved it, nothing bad happened. It's a movie, you know. It's, and the people behind it aren't responsible for how other people take it, obviously. They're looking to scare people, really. And frankly, it's just irritating. The film is about the origins of a villain, but is shown as the downfall of a man who suffers from mental illness and abuse and repeatedly is dealt a bad hand in life. He loses his therapist outlet and access to the medication due to the system budget cuts, and he has struggled to establish what is real in his life after finding out how truly messed up his life has been. That he has repressed the majority of his life. And as we watch it, we are learning it with him. For to a certain extent, you know, in terms of his relationship with his mother and stuff like that. I won't keep going on about it. I think, you know, in conclusion, I think everyone should see Joker. Not if you're a kid, though. Not even as a comic book film, because it doesn't feel like a comic book film. It is a film by itself. It doesn't feel like a comic book movie, nothing like Marvel or even DC. It is not as violent as people are claiming, but it is quite graphic, as I said, when the violence does occur. I love Joker, and for all the right reasons, I do not want a sequel. And now for a new series in this podcast. Myself and a lot of you guys seem to want me to cover the Injustice Gods Among Us storyline. And frankly, I can't wait to do so. so this is going to be me going through the story of Injustice Gods Among Us, the comic books. And if you guys want me to cover the events of the first game, I can do that. But I will not be covering anything related to Injustice 2. Because I am not up to date with that series. I've been reading it whenever I can get a new volume. But I am quite behind. It's in like issue 80 something, and I'm only on like the fourth volume. If that. Yeah, I think it's the fourth one. But yeah, it's one of my favorite series. I've been reading it for years. I love both games. The story is fantastic. For those of you that don't know, Injustice Gods Among Us was a game developed by NetherRealm Studios, the creators of Mortal Kombat, and it was written by Tom Taylor, I think. The series does not interact or affect the main DC continuity. It is a standalone series that tells the events leading up to the first Injustice game. This is the first of a 5-year tale. I will be going through each one, and if you want me to cover the events of the game, as I said before, you know, just let me know. And again, I'm not going to cover the events of Injustice 2 or the what's leading up to it. Maybe when I eventually get caught up, I can do that. But yeah, so that's just kind of the explanation. Let's begin. Clark Kent, or as you may know him, Superman, lies next to his wife Lois Lane one night peacefully as he is suddenly pulled from his sleep by a wonderful sound next to him, the sound of two heartbeats. He flies off to meet Batman on a rooftop. Clark's best friend figures out that Lois is pregnant before Clark can even say anything. What the world's greatest detective wasn't counting on was for Superman to say, "We want you to be the godfather." Bruce smiles. The seemingly ideal world is about to be shaken by the actions of the Joker, who shoots Jimmy Olsen in the face and kidnaps Lois Lane. When Superman is unable to find his wife, he's panicked and pleads with Batman to help. Batman calls the entire Justice League to help search for Lois. The Flash instantly arrives and begins to run around Metropolis. He didn't find Lois, but he did stumble upon the Scarecrow's body, which had died at the hands of the Joker's toxin. Wonder Woman informs him that the Joker was in a submarine, and that's why they couldn't find him all this time. Clark locates the submarine, pulling it from the water and tearing off the side. He enters to find Lois Lane being operated on by the Joker and Harley Quinn. Before he can reach them, he is doused by a gas. When he looks up after a moment, he sees Doomsday in between him and saving his wife. Having no time to battle with the creature, he picks him up and rockets off into space. The Joker and Harley flee. Harley bids goodbye to her first ever submarine, she dubbed Gunter. Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern, criticizes her choice in submarine names. Batman begins to interrogate the Joker about his actions. The clown reveals he placed a nuclear warhead in Metropolis and linked the signal to a heart monitor connected to Lois Lane. Batman realizes that the toxin Clark was hit with must have been mixed with kryptonite so it could enter his bloodstream. He tries to get through to Superman, saying, "Superman, whatever you're seeing, it's not real." The Joker asks if he knew Lois was pregnant. Batman responds with a set of knuckles into his mouth. As Superman reaches the upper atmosphere, he finally hears Batman's cry of, "It's Lois." The gas wears off and he is forced to look on in horror at the reality of his actions. He sees Lois's body floating lifeless in the dark void of space. When that is still hitting Clark, the rest of the League are forced to witness the nuclear explosion in Metropolis. Millions die instantly. The League save as many as they can while Batman brings Joker to the police station. Clark clings to the body of Lois and thinks how he was tricked into murdering his wife and unborn child. He asks Wonder Woman to hold them and keep them safe, launching away to find the one responsible for this. When Batman was trying to deal with the Joker, Superman tears down the wall of the station and goes for the clown, knocking Batman away. The Joker pushes him even further by asking, "It might be too soon, but do you think you'll ever love again? Maybe you won't kill your next family." His laugh is cut short by Superman's arm ramming through his chest. Superman stays in the Fortress of Solitude for days. The Joker's blood is still on his arm. He can't grieve in a way that makes him hurt any less. The world is in chaos all around, and he simply says, "No more." He flies to the Middle East and unseats a president and drops him into the people that he's been tormenting. Diana arrives and tells him that he is not in the best state to be captured on the nearby cameras, pointing out his unshaven and tired look. He agrees and she calls a press conference for him to speak his mind. Standing at the UN with Wonder Woman at his side, Superman speaks to the world. He reveals his identity as Clark Kent, reporter of the Daily Planet. And he tells them that he does not care about their beliefs and that they must accept his implication of a worldwide ceasefire. Any fighting back against this is met by a quick attack by Superman. The US government makes a terrible mistake. They send Mirror Master to kidnap the Kents. Mirror Master warns Superman to stop and to go back to his usual superheroics. It's been a week since the death of Lois Lane. Diana is rallying the rest of the League to side with Superman. Cyborg helps and they find Mirror Master quickly. Batman is on a mission of his own. He gets to the White House. He informs the president of how his failure will strengthen them, unite them. The president inquires as to why it's them and not us. The League goes around the world stopping wars. Superman notices the lack of assistance from Batman. When he arrives at the Batcave, Damian, the newest Robin, thanks him for killing the Joker. Nightwing asks Clark if he's alright. Clark just smiles and walks towards the Batcomputer. Superman questions Bruce and says of all the people he thought would sympathize with his situation, it would be him. Batman tells him he needs to stop all of this. Superman responds to hearing that he's scaring people by ripping off Batman's mask and stating that they should be scared. Too scared to push the button, too scared to pull the trigger. Clark tries to say that Bruce would have done the same thing if he was in his position, and that every time he let the Joker live, he condemned Moore to die. Bruce knows this, but emphasizes that they don't get to decide who lives and dies. Elsewhere, a battle has broken out between the League and the forces of Atlantis, led by Aquaman. As the result of a disagreement and an accidental shot at Wonder Woman from an Atlantean soldier. Clark asks why Bruce let the Joker do this to him. He loved that child more than anything else in this world already. He judges Bruce for sitting in the dark ignoring his sons, pointing out how many friends Dick and Damien lost in Metropolis, asking if Bruce has even tried to console them yet, and what's his excuse for not being a father. Batman has had enough and punches Superman, who is completely unfazed. The battle with Atlantis causes the alert to go off in the Batcave. Superman offers his hand to Bruce one last time before leaving. Bruce simply responds with, "I'm sorry, Clark, I can't." Aquaman has summoned the Kraken. It is injured quickly by Superman, and he tells Arthur to stand down. The King of the Seas has his forces invading countries all over the world. He tells Clark to consider it a show of strength and to get the hell out of my ocean. Superman will have no part in this, though. Taking Diana, Hal, and Shazam to pull Atlantis out of the ocean and drop it into the middle of the Sahara Desert. Aquaman submits and tells Wonder Woman to give Superman a message from him. One of him being a source of experience in ruling peacefully, having done so for several years. And that he's sorry about Lois. Diana does not pass on this message. The reign of Superman continues, and in Australia he and Diana cripple a wannabe superhero who tried to stand up to them. The Flash watches on in horror and doesn't intervene. He watched in slow motion as they destroy this young man's body in a fraction of a second. Clark also stops Two-Face from killing a news reporter. Superman goes on TV to tell the world that the villains of Gotham cannot be allowed to threaten anyone again. Nightwing realizes they're going after Arkham. Damian argues that Batman might be wrong. When the League arrives, they are blocked by Batman, along with Nightwing. But the League has brought Robin with them. Batman feels that they shouldn't go after the inmates, but Damian argues that they are wrong for defending the inmates, and that the League should be allowed to execute them all. When the cell doors open, the Flash moves in and takes all the prisoners out of there. Batman activates a virus he implanted in Cyborg, causing him tremendous pain. The League is disgusted and angry, but Nightwing gets Batman to stop. At that moment, Green Arrow is dropping Harley Quinn off at Arkham, and she ends up opening all the cell doors. Solomon Grundy comes through the floor and grabs Robin, pulling him down underneath. Superman flies through his chest, and seeing as Grundy isn't alive, Batman blows up his head. Noticing their teamwork, Superman says, "Nice job." Damian begins beating the inmates brutally, and Nightwing tries to get him to stop. And as they'd done so many times before in training, Damian threw his baton at Dick, but instead of catching it, this time Nightwing was off guard and it hits his head. He tips over for a moment, losing balance, and when he hits the ground, his neck comes into contact with some rubble. He dies instantly from the crack. Bruce comes out of the hole after the battle with Grundy and sees what has just happened. Damian, his son, tries to apologize, but Bruce just screams, "What did you do?" All the fighting stopped as both sides, hero and inmate alike, watched Batman carry the body of his first son, Dick Grayson, out into the rain. He is but the first in a long line of those to fall in this story. But that is part one of Injustice Gods Among Us, year one. And I think I wasn't sure whether I was going to include a book recommendation this week, but I will just do it because, you know, we got to be consistent with this stuff. My recommendation this week is Todd McFarlane's Spawn. I read the first volume of the Origin series. It's very 90s, obviously, that's when it was made. But I've also been watching the animated series too, and both are fantastic. I would definitely recommend the animated series. Keith David is the perfect voice actor for Spawn. The book is very good. The art style is very grimy, and you feel how disgusting this world is meant to be. But at the same time, you know, Spawn's design is awesome, and it's very, very cool. Yeah, so if you ever get the chance to pick up Spawn, the Origin Series Volume 1, definitely do that. I'd recommend that anyway. I'm hoping to pick up more eventually, but for now, the animated series will have to do. So that'll just about do it for this episode of the State of the Multiverse podcast. I've been your host, Reese. I hope you've had a great time listening. I hope whatever you're doing, it's going really well, and that you're having the best day or night possible. Be sure to check out those other pages I talked about today. Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum, Aw Crap, the Hellboy Podcast, Redneck Saints, and The Animated Life. Be sure to check out all of them. They are all some really cool podcasts and really cool pages. In the next episode, I will continue the Injustice series because this is something people have been wanting for a while. And again, I will have the more up-to-date news because I had to just kind of get that other stuff out of the way today. But everything will be more current because there's some stuff I really want to talk about that I've been hearing lately. And I think you guys will really want to hear it too. So until next time, thanks for all the new listeners I've become aware of. And if you guys share the podcast or promote it in any way, be sure to let me know, because you know I'll give you guys a shout out, be it on the episode or on our Instagram page. But yeah, until next time, I've been your host, Reese, and you've been listening to the State of the Multiverse podcast. You have a good night.